SBP MOP C Briefs, January 17-18, 2023, read by an automated voice. SPP, MISO applying for DOE funds to help with JTIQ portfolio. Oklahoma City SPP told its members last week that it will apply for grants from the U.S. Department of Energy to help fund transmission projects recently identified with MISO along their seam that could unclog their generation interconnection queues. David Kelly, SPP Copyright RTO Insider LLC. David Kelly, the RTO's newly minted Vice President of Engineering, said DOE's $10.5 billion Grid Resilience and Innovation Partnerships, or GRIP program, aligns neatly with SPP's Joint Targeted Interconnection Queue, or JTIQ, study with MISO. GRIP, authorized under the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, is designed to accelerate the deployment of transformative projects that improve the grid's flexibility and resilience against the growing threats of extreme weather and climate change. It includes a focus on interregional projects, investments that accelerate the interconnection of clean energy generation, and using distribution assets to provide backup power and reduce transmission requirements. The JTIQ study resulted in 5 projects on the MISO SPP seam that should help reduce congestion and allow additional resources, primarily wind farms, to interconnect with the RTO's systems. Their staffs have proposed a cost allocation that assigns most of the portfolio's $1.06 billion in cost to generation. We have still yet to find the magic unicorn of developing transmission along the seams, Kelly said. When we looked at the GRIP program and what it was intended to do, it almost reads as if it was written for something like what JTIQ was trying to do. It was kind of a no-brainer for us to seek to receive some of this money on behalf of our members. Kelly said an initial concept paper has already been filed with the program's administrators, meeting a January 13th deadline. DOE will review the applications to determine whether they are worthy of full applications, providing that feedback to applicants. Final applications will be due May 19th. Under DOE's Grid Innovation Program, applications must come from a state or a group of states, regulatory commissions, or tribal or local governments. That has led SPP and MISO to collaborate with the Minnesota Department of Commerce and the Great Plains Institute, or GPI, on the effort. The state of Minnesota, as a potential eligible recipient of the funds, made the filing. The Institute is coordinating the effort by holding discussions with utilities that will build the projects and those utilities and states that will be affected. Our job has been to facilitate all potentially affected folks to kind of vet the DOE requirements, Matt Prorick, GPI's senior policy manager, told RTO Insider. How might those be fulfilled? Are the JTIQ projects a good fit for this funding bucket? The proposed cost allocation for JTIQ projects. SPP. Kelly pointed out that the GRIP program is a partnership involving federal and private dollars. We feel pretty good about it. We've talked to DOE a number of times, and they were very interested in what we're doing here, Kelly said. We are being encouraged by what we're hearing. But again, because this is a partnership, we do think it's important that we lay the groundwork that not only are we pursuing DOE funds, but that we also have a commitment from SPP, MISO, and our customers in our membership that we have the other half of this bill covered. Under the staff's proposed JTIQ cost-sharing methodology, generators will pay 90% of the portfolio's cost and load will pay 10%. SPP load will pay about $71 million and MISO load about $29 million, without the DOE funding. As with any discussion about allocating costs, several stakeholders raised concerns. Steve Gaw, APA Copyright RTO Insider LLC. I think all of us are seeing this DOE funding opportunity as a way to facilitate mitigating some of the concerns the stakeholders are expressing and the opportunity for that mitigation to really help make this a success, the Advanced Power Alliance's Steve Gaw said. The second round of that application process, if the application makes it there, will be a very opportune time for additional comments of endorsement. The Cost Allocation Working Group, or COG, on Friday unanimously endorsed and recommended that the Regional State Committee approve the 90-10 allocation. It also recommended that the 10% load portion of the JTIQ's annual transmission revenue requirement, or ATRR, be based upon adjusted production costs, as outlined by the RTO's joint operating agreement. The load portion of the portfolio's ATRR be regionally allocated on a load ratio share basis consistent with previous RSC policies. Each building transmission owner recover the non-capital cost component allocable to generation interconnection customers through a formula rate template in the building TO's region, and SPP's load share in the current portfolio and for the next study of the southern party of the MISO SPP seam be regionally allocated on a load ratio share basis consistent with previous RSC policies. The motions all passed unanimously except for the last one, which Louisiana, North Dakota, and Oklahoma opposed. The RSC meets January 30. Kelly said SPP plans to make the appropriate filings after the April round of governance meetings. "We have to ensure we're in lockstep with MISO and its processes," he said. GIQ continues to expand. The JTIQ work will only result in more generation interconnection requests as SPP staff continue to work on reducing the backlog of requests in its queue. Kelly said the SPP and MISO queues have grown since the JTIQ work began, with no end in sight. "While we've made significant progress in clearing our existing backlog, there continues to be significant interest in developing new generation, both within the SPP footprint as well as MISO's," he said. The backlog, which once stood at 651 requests and nearly 120 gigawatts, had been reduced to 370 and 68.2 gigawatts, respectively, in mid-December. However, the 2022 study cluster that closed in early January added 53.8 gigawatts of requests, pushing the backlog to about 122 gigawatts. "Many of those requests have yet to be validated by staff, leaving the active queue at 463 requests and just over 88 gigawatts. They'll take a couple of months to evaluate the impact of this cluster. It's really, really big," SPP's Giuliano Freitas told members, noting that the 2022 cluster exceeded forecast by about 10 gigawatts. He said the new cluster is about 50% solar and 25% wind, in line with the active queue. "Solar requests account for almost half the queue, with wind requests at 23.1 gigawatts and storage at 12.9 gigawatts. SPP currently only has about 250 megawatts of installed solar capacity," said Casey Cathy, director of system planning. "That is kind of our next frontier." Freitas said that considering only about 40% of GI requests result in signed interconnection agreements, SPP could add more than 45 gigawatts of capacity by 2028. The grid operator has added 27.7 gigawatts of capacity since January 2017, executing 143 GI agreements. Members defer on PRM deficiency RRs. The committee deferred action on a pair of revision requests related to deficiency penalties by load-responsible entities unable to meet the grid operator's new 15% planning reserve margin, or PRM. Following late changes to the two requests by stakeholder groups the night before the MOPC meeting began, committee members agreed to wait until a special conference call Friday to consider the change requests. That will give additional time to several stakeholder groups who have yet to approve the proposed revisions. The committee will then be able to endorse a recommendation for the RSC and the Board of Directors when they meet next week. SPP is hopeful FERC will approve the revision requests in time to accredit resources for the summer. Staff have been working on the mitigation strategy at the Board's direction since July. It became necessary when the Board increased the PRM from 12% to 15%, effective next year, which left some members complaining they would not have enough time to meet the requirements. COO Lanny Nickel has said the mitigation concepts include reducing the deficiency payment charge, extending the timeline to cure deficiencies, and adding mechanisms to assure capacity. MOPC's leadership for 2023, Chair Alan Myers, ITC Holdings, Staff Secretary Lanny Nickel, SPP, and Vice Chair Joe Lang, Omaha Public Power District. Copyright RTO Insider LLC.
RR 536, proposed by SPP's Market Monitoring Unit, would replace the sufficiency valuation methodology's current penalty framework with a sufficiency valuation curve similar to the curve that New York ISO uses to value capacity in its market.
The curve starts at twice the cost of new entry, or CONE, until regional accreditation reaches the sum of total non-coincident peak loads, then slopes downward to a net CONE value when regional accreditation reaches the PRM. When accreditation exceeds the PRM, the curve continues its downward slope until it reaches $0 when regional accreditation reaches 1.15 times the PRM. By focusing on how valuable excess accredited capacity is to the market given the regional level of accredited capacity, this methodology shifts from a punitive approach to a tool that manages the current deficiency and properly rewards Layer E's with excess accredited capacity. Staff worked with the MMU on RR 536 and also drafted RR 537. Which clarifies that in Layer E, making the deficiency payment will be sufficient for this year's resource adequacy requirement. It also says that any entity receiving a deficiency payment cannot subsequently sell any of the excess capacity during the applicable calendar year. "I think we're getting closer. Today is too soon, given the language was only provided last night," Evergy's Mo Awad said. "I would like to take some time and review the language." Staff drew up a number of issues for stakeholder consideration, including clarifying that the waiver process is only in effect when the PRM increases, the timing of when generation must be committed to SPP, based on a deficiency megawatt amount, how the cost of new entry is broken into seasonal components, and simplifying megawatt allocation for the MMU's CONE process. The Supply Adequacy and Regional Tariff Working Groups will take up the revision requests on Tuesday and Thursday, respectively. The COG met Friday but did not vote on them. It has scheduled a special meeting for Wednesday. December storm raises same issues. Staff told the committee that the December winter storm, while less severe than the February 2021 storm that forced the grid operator to shed load for the first time, still highlighted some of the same issues from 2 years ago. C.J. Brown, Director of System Operations, said constricted fuel supplies and extreme cold weather-related outages led to some generation unavailability as surface temperatures in the SPP footprint were up to 25 degrees Celsius below historical averages. Staff began receiving notifications on December 20 from natural gas suppliers that non-firm usage of pipelines would be limited through December 28. Ice flows on the Missouri River threatened several gigawatts of hydro generation, and the RTO's main control room operated on backup power during the event after the facility's transformer malfunctioned. Empire Electric District and City Utilities of Springfield, Missouri, near the Missouri-Arkansas border, experienced extremely low voltages on December 23 caused by resource trips, lack of deliverability, and parallel system flows. Empire had to shed about 25 megawatts of load for 15 minutes on December 22. Still, SPP was able to meet a peak demand of 47.2 gigawatts on December 22, a winter record. Brown said that if the worst weather conditions had shifted to December 23 or December 24, SPP would have had 2 to 5 gigawatts of capacity at risk. It doesn't mean we would have had load shed, he said, noting that the RTO could have reached energy emergency alert levels. None of us want to be in a headline that says we shed load over Christmas. We need to get better information from gas suppliers. Midwest Energy's Bill Dowling cautioned SPP about taking comfort in the amount of gas generation it committed before the cold front blew in. It's one thing to know that a gas unit is committed a couple or 3 days in advance, it's something else to get the gas, he said. If the gas producers aren't producing and it doesn't show up in interstate pipeline, you're not going to get it. I don't care how much you paid for it. Josh Phillips, who represents SPP at the North American Energy Standards Board, said the board's Gas Electric Harmonization Forum is preparing a report on three main areas of concern during extreme weather events: fuel delivery assurance, communication practices, and gas reliability. Power generators and load-serving entities are underrepresented on the forum, Phillips said. He urged more industry participation as the final report delves into whether there's a need to require every gas generator to have firm gas supply and transportation contracts. Dowling said that whenever he listens to discussions between the electric and gas sectors, it ends up, this is your problem, electricity, so you have to change to meet our requirements. If gas suppliers declare force majeure, you just don't get your gas, said longtime MOPC member Bill Grant, now consulting for XO Energy. The NAESB agreement needs teeth if they don't perform. That's the answer. Brown said staff will complete its post-event review and gather lessons learned, while also participating in the FERC-NERC joint inquiry on the storm. They will continue to support resource adequacy efforts through the RSC and other stakeholder groups. Members endorse ITP scope, STEP. The committee endorsed two stakeholder groups' recommendation to approve the 2024 Integrated Transmission Plan scope, which includes assumptions not standardized by the ITP manual. SPP's Casey Cathy catches up with longtime MOPC member Bill Grant, who represents XO Energy on the committee. Grant retired last June after 40 years with XL Energy, 16 of those on MOPC. Copyright RTO Insider LLC. The assessment will study two futures, a reference case and an emerging technologies case that assume between 49.9 and 54.9 gigawatts of wind resources and between 14 and 22 gigawatts of solar resources by year 10. SPP currently has 32.5 gigawatts of installed wind capacity and 14,000 turbines on its system, but only about 250 megawatts of solar, Cathy said. The scope also includes peak and energy increases in both futures to account for electric vehicle growth and an approved methodology for retirements based on participants' resource plans. Staff used those plans to also determine wind, solar, and storage capacity amounts. The study scenarios will assume all companies meet the PRM. We believe the two futures capture the necessary scenarios for building out the transmission system, Cathy said. The committee also endorsed the SPP Transmission Expansion Plan, or STEP, a comprehensive list of all transmission projects over a 20-year planning horizon. The report indicates that SPP members completed A-grade projects costing more than $40 million from last April to year-end. SPP issued 76 notifications to construct for $822 million during the same period, 12 NTCs were withdrawn. Cathy reminded the committee that the 2022 ITP assessment was a reliability-only study, thus resulting in a smaller portfolio. RAS scheme passes. The committee unanimously approved a consent agenda that included 8 revision requests, an extension of the Transmission Owner Selection Process Task Force's sunset to January 31, 2024, a waiver request to include the 2023 ITP Needs Assessments Market Power Flow Models and consider the 2023 ITP MPM violations in the 2024 ITP, and a sponsored upgrade study of NextEra Energy's proposal to add a 345/138 of a kilovolt transformer at Oklahoma Gas and Electric Cimarron Substation. Nebraska Public Power District had RR 505 pulled off the agenda for a separate vote over concerns that the Remedial Action Scheme, or RAS criteria, would lead to unintended consequences. The change would supplant the need for approval conditions and clarifies RSA appropriate uses. Members approved the revision request with a 95% vote. 5 other RRs, if approved by the Board of Directors next week, would. RR 519 formalized the SPP operating criteria's requirement to perform an annual resource real-time availability evaluation and report findings and recommendations to appropriate stakeholder groups. RR 522 clarified the use of the word separately to direct parties in the agreement to register each facility separately when they have multiple resources involved with the pseudo-tie agreement. RR 523 modify existing pro forma generator interconnection agreements and language to provide a clearer indemnification standard with clearer language. The changes are modeled on PJM's interconnection service agreement. RR 526 specify that a resource or an aggregation must be able to maintain a response of at least 0.1 megawatts for at least an hour to participate in the integrated marketplace. If the anticipated response drops below 0.1 megawatts, the resource must set its commitment status to outage, consistent with recent FERC orders and SPP's current process. RR 528, clean up business practice 7060 by using evaluation rather than study for projects that have been issued an NTC, aligning the term with how it is used when an NTC is re-evaluated through the ITP. The consent agenda also included 2 other RRs that don't require board approval and go into effect immediately. RR 525 deletes business practices 7100 and 7150, which became obsolete with the implementation of SPP's competitive transmission selection process. RR 529, the annual cleanup to correct grammar, punctuation, and acronyms in the production and or forward-looking protocols.